we're harder on ourselves than we are towards our loved ones.
Let's talk more about this way of being compassionate with ourselves in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Tara Cousineau. She is the author of The Perfectionist's Dilemma. Learn the art of self-compassion and become a happy achiever. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, TaraCousineau.com. And she spells her name T-A-R-A and her last name C-O-U-S-I-N-E-A-U, TaraCousineau.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Tara Cousineau, and we're talking about being compassionate with ourselves. And you use a phrase, you call it kindsight. Instead of insight, it's kindsight. What do you mean by kindsight?
It's so interesting that you picked that up, Justine. I wrote a book a number of years ago called The Kindness Cure, and I had two terms in there. One is kindfulness, which is really kind of bringing kindness into this, the mindfulness moment, right? And then kindsight, I define as viewing your life experiences with tenderness and understanding. And often we need a little bit of time to be able to do that. But people often come in conversation with regrets, or they wish that things could have gone differently. And that's when I say the practice of kindsight can be very useful, is to be able to have the space in your heart to understand that you were doing the best that you could at the time with the information and the skills that you had. And now you can learn from that. And that's the kindsight piece of it.
Nice, nice. I know that you have developed method to give us an alternative to perfectionism, and that's and you use the acronym EVOLVE, EVOLVE. So let's talk about that. Please unpack that a bit for us. The E and the first E and V
Yeah.
might.
All right. I'll try to do it briefly.
Okay. Yeah, I know. The
Yes.
whole book is filled with it. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So the Evolve method is a way to bring more self-compassion in your life and sort of not succumb to the negative effects of perfectionism, right? We know that the value is noble, right, for excellence. But the actual behavior of perfectionism can be very detrimental. So the acronym stands for E. I have to remember this myself now. Embody the present moment, which is going back to what we were talking about earlier. Really being present to your life, your sensations, thoughts, feelings, naming them.
Can I tell you a bit of a story about evolving our inner being and our expression? I used to teach horseback riding to young people, and if a young person first gets on the horse, it's scary because they're in their head. And they're sitting way up high on this horse, and the horse is kind of moving around, and it's scary. And so I use that technique of getting them to feel their shoulders, and then feel their stomach, and then feel their buttocks on the saddle, and then feel their legs, and finally their feet. And I could just watch them just start to relax as I would move them from their head to their body.
Yes.
And so that like that step of being in the present moment with our bodies, I think that E in some ways.
It's so key. You know, we learn to disconnect from our bodies with all the busyness and doing and being in our heads, and we prioritize our brains over our bodies. So when we're embodied and when we're grounded in our bodies, we can learn, right? I imagine that those students then are much more open to learning once they've kind of worked through that initial fear response by just settling into their own body, connecting with the horse, right? Really feeling the energy. Right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's also, I guess, the next step in evolve is validating your experience.
Exactly. And this is where I feel like it's social emotional intelligence 101. People have a hard time naming their feelings, or they've just constricted their range of emotional expression. And I think culture does this to us. And so most perfectionists, like in the context of perfectionism, have at some point been invalidated in their life. You know, their feelings, their desires, their dreams were not reinforced or supported one way or another. And so learning how to validate your experiences is so important. And again, it has a little bit of naming to it, being able to identify how you're feeling, starting to practice self-compassion, which I get to in the next step. But, you know, validating your feelings and sort of broadening your range of your emotional vocabulary. You know, it's so funny. I mean, it doesn't matter what age my clients are. They could be, I mean, I mostly see adults at this point, 18 or 80. I'll just bring out the feeling sensation chart. And they're like, I don't know how I'm feeling. I'm like, well, look at these 100 things. Can you pick one of these?
I did take that whole chart and I just checked off, you know, the numbers, and it was very useful.
Yeah. I mean, there's some beautiful visual charts online that you can find. And I have a poster in my work office. But that's partly about validating your feelings. And it's not like staying with them. It's not being overcome or succumbing to them, but really being able to identify what's actually happening in that moment. And then the next letter is O, F for open your heart. And that is really where I begin to introduce self-compassion, defining it. What is it? What are the elements of self-compassion? So that's the work in that step.
And I want to just pause there, because you really reflect about to coordinate or to have the connection between the head and the heart. That's really important. I mean, in this culture, we live in our heads. We're so intellectual. We're so rational, you know, in our brain function and everything. So you're saying, hey, there's another way of being, and there's this roadmap to the head and the heart, and there's a deep connection there that can be useful.
Absolutely. We need to connect our head and our hearts, and we can do that in a number of ways. I cannot tell you, Justine, how many people come and say, oh, I don't do self-compassion. Like, that's not me. I'm like, what do you mean you don't do self-compassion? And, you know, and then we talk about, well, you know, if someone in your family, your child or your partner or a friend was suffering, how would you be towards that person? What would you do? What would you say? How would you feel? And of course, they said, well, you know, I would give them a hug. I would ask them how I could help. I would encourage them. And like, what would the tone be? Well, it would be much softer. Yeah. Okay, great. You would be a good friend in that moment to that person. Can you practice being a good friend to yourself? That's why I prefer the word befriending to self-compassion, because self-compassion can sound very lofty. Mm. It can sound like an unattainable ideal in some way. So befriending, I feel like, is almost more, you can metabolize the word friend a little bit easier. And so that's what that step is about, is learning how to be a friend to yourself.
And in doing that, I'm just reminded, many of us are meditators and we do mindfulness meditations. And what you add to that, and I think you learned part of this from Tara Brach, and that's to add compassion to mindfulness meditation. And that's the two wings that she talks about. Yes. Is that right?
Absolutely. Actually, when I did that meditation teacher training, it was with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brach in person. It was one of the best things I had ever experienced in my entire life. And I'm very influenced by Tara Brach. I've done a number of her retreats. And it is like, we can't be mindful without being kind to, you know, I mean, we can be, but then, you know, as they say, you know, like you can just be a really good sniper, have no, you know, you can be aware of the present moment, but without the heart quality in it, you know, where is that going to let, you know, end up? So I have a term, that's where the term kindfulness comes in for me, is that I teach mindfulness also. And I like to use the word kindfulness just to even languaging it in a way that actually will bring the word kindness into people's vocabulary. So that's how I like to see it. And the naming, like you were talking about, sort of naming your parts, I think is also an act of kindness, even if your labels for those parts or those patterns are snarky, you know, coming from a sense, you know, I have a part that I call my teenage Tara, you know, every time I go visit my mother, she's 87 and I have to talk her down in the car on the way, you know, but, you know, we're really making space to kind of befriend those parts.
And that takes me, there was something that you mentioned in my reading was co-regulation. It's an evolutionary imperative that we surround ourselves with people who are caring, and we tend to, what is it, vibrate with one another.
Absolutely.
So energetically. So talk about what co-regulation.
You know, I actually talked about that probably more in my first book, The Kindness Cure, and I do mention it in this book because a lot of this tending to and you know, opening up your heart is, in a way, some people might refer to this as a spiritual reparenting, right? If you can relate to these parts that have been wounded, you are actually emulating the process of relationships, and you can be that kind person to yourself that you didn't have at moments in your life when you really needed that. And to recruit allies, I think one of the most moving outcomes for me when I run Befriending the Inner Critic workshops or Overcoming Perfectionism workshops is that I'm getting people in the room that would prefer to be alone. They don't want to share their experiences. They feel like they have to present themselves to the world in a certain way. But when they actually come to the groups and hear that that other people are as mean to themselves as they are, there's this recognition that, you know, often happens in any kind of support group. It's like, oh, I do that too. And I call that a co-regulation, the kind of experience, is that there's the empathy and there's the recognition, and then there's also the compassion for the other person. I had one young woman, she's getting her PhD, right? She's at an Ivy League, and she was saying to herself almost every single day, I am so stupid. I am so stupid. And she'd say, no, Tara, really, I am doing really stupid things. Like, that was like the number one word in her vocabulary. And there were other people in the group that were talking her down a little bit, so saying, I feel that way too sometimes. And here's what I do to try to counteract that. So instead of me being the teacher, her peers are being the teacher. That is empathy, that is co-regulation. And when I actually went through a little bit of mini IFS with her in that group, and I asked her, like, when did this part of you that says that you're so stupid first show up in your life? And she was able to identify, she was about 12 years old and it was in school, and she had some terrible harassment and bullying. And she came to see that that part of her was trying to preempt anybody out in the world for calling her stupid. It was much more in her control to be able to do that to herself, at great disservice and harm, but it was a preemptive play by that part. And it was almost like the light bulb went on for her. And then in the next weeks, she was saying, "I realized that I didn't really need to do this for myself, that I'm doing just fine the way I am, and I've come really far, and thank you to the group members and blah, 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 blah." And I was like, "Oh my God, thank you, Lord." In that moment that she was able to see that her inner critic was trying to protect her from being harmed and humiliated by other people. But wow, what a hard way to go about life. And she stopped going to therapy. She's like, "I don't need the therapist anymore. This was so helpful to me." And I was like, "Oh, the power of the group for co-regulation."
Right, exactly. I'm thinking of another story that really I loved that you pointed out. It was Chloe when she was part of the
The Bachelor franchise.
tell her story about coming out of that and what she felt and
Yeah,
what
so
she
names were
learned.
changed, obviously, and this was somebody in my practice from literally like 25 years ago. So the whole Bachelor, Bachelorette series was pretty new. It might have only been out one or two seasons. So the whole genre, right, of reality TV was new at the time. We didn't know what we know now, really. And so she was on the show, and she was in the first episode, and then she got cut from the lineup and was absolutely humiliated. Like, she didn't get the rose to go on to the next episode. And the way that these things work is that they're pre-recorded, obviously. And so she was going through months of anxiety, just dreading the day that this season was going to be aired and that she was going to be off the show on the first episode. She felt so humiliated. And she went through this sort of painful internal process of, maybe I should have worn the red dress. Maybe I should have had my hair in a French twist. Maybe I should have turned the other way. And, your heart really goes out to these, young women. I mean, I don't know, she was probably 24 at the time. And so then the season aired, and she and a sibling, her sister, decided to go do something completely different, not watch it. They went on vacation, so they didn't have to see it. So it was a little bit of a buffer. But when she returned home, what happened was really stunning to her. She got these messages: "Chloe, you're so beautiful. You look so great. You're too good for that guy. He is a jerk." I mean, red roses showed up on her doorstep. People were like, "Wow, that was so brave of you. How did you do that? I never would have done something like that. You have such guts." Like, all of a sudden, she was getting all of this feedback that was completely contrary to what her inner critic was telling her, which was a very shaming narrative. And then that was like the healing point for her. She was like, "Why was I so hard on myself? Just like this young woman who's getting a PhD is calling herself stupid every day." And that's where we go to the next step, L, which is love your inner critic, right? Really turning towards that part and saying, "Oh, honey, you're trying to help me, but this isn't working." And that's hard for people at first, because what they think they should do is silence it, banish it, get rid of it, as if that's like an easy thing to do.
Love your and name your inner critic.
Yeah, that's the naming
And
chapter. Yeah.
right,
Yeah.
exactly. And then the second V about make a vow, I
Is make
think.
this is about commitment. This is about committing to yourself. Is making a vow to be there for yourself, to identify your values, what's really important to you. Even like not just goals, right? Which might be to, I don't know, get a good grade or get a good job or get married. These are all important kinds of things, but even the more transcendent values in life, having a quality of life, having loving relationships, these kinds of things, is really kind of looking at those and then really working towards identifying what are the conditions that you need to cultivate to live into those values. Because otherwise it's magical thinking. Right. So, okay, let's just take like dating. Like if I want to meet a partner in life, well, I need to put myself out there. I need to find the courage to go, I don't know, on a dating app these days, or let my friends and family know I'm looking for a mature guy or a mature girl. But the idea is that you need to kind of put yourself in the experiences rather than just having them in your head, right? So making a vow is committing to yourself, and then what are you going to do in your daily life to create the conditions to allow these things that you want more of in your life to come to fruition?
And I'm thinking too, this might relate to igniting your joy.
Yes, absolutely. One of my mantras for years, because I was a perfectionist, right? I had that story, in my book of how it landed me in the emergency room, was it was having a very simple mantra of put joy in the center of your life, Tara. Like I had it written down, I had it on a screensaver on my phone. It's like put joy in the center of your life, because we have to orient our attention, right? So again, I'm going to go back to the tricky brain, is that our brain will prioritize the things that could possibly go wrong versus the things that could possibly go right. So it is a constant tending to, like the mind is a garden and we can pull out the weeds, but we actually have to nourish what it is that we want to grow.
That's kind of like that negative bias
The negativity bias.
that Rick Hansen often talks about.
Yes. Yes. And he's a great teacher of it. And I use one of his tools in every workshop that I do, which is the HEAL acronym. I have it in this book too, because I just love it so much. And I love Rick Hansen, which is to, and it is, what he would call positive neuroplasticity training, is that we can actually take advantage of the way that we learn, the way that our brain works by orienting our attention and then living into those practices. So that's how we change that Netflix recommendation engine, is that we have to give it new experiences.
And then that last E is about excellence and energy, I think. Is
It's
that right?
the energy of excellence. And what's so funny about that is I had these five steps, and then COVID happened. And it was really difficult as a psychologist at the time. We were very busy. I mean, everyone was freaking out, and we had to like pivot to telehealth and all these different things. And the traditional talk therapy strategies weren't working. I'm like, no one's getting better. Everyone's flatlined. Everyone's nervous system is completely shot. How can I help these people? So I started to get training in energy psychology and energy medicine. So emotional freedom technique is tapping. Donna Eden with her, daily energy routine. I did the whole year long training, and I was like, why aren't people doing this? These have come from ancient traditions, and it's not even in our healthcare system. So I added the E, and I was like, oh, perfect. Now it's evolve. Like it actually spells evolve, but it kind of circles right back to the first E, embody the present moment. So the energy of excellence in my mind is cultivating daily practices that balance your nervous system as you're going for your goals. And I bring in the tapping piece, because tapping, and I'm sure that you've probably had people on your program.
No, we really haven't really discussed a lot of tapping through the years. I think we may have done a few, but tell us, what is tapping? What do you mean by that?
So, there's controversy over tapping, as there was controversy over mindfulness 25 years ago when people thought we were all woo-woo, right? But there are now quite a number of studies and meta-analyses on the effectiveness of emotional freedom technique. So the clinical term is emotional freedom technique, and it's basically tapping on anywhere from like 9 to 14 points on your head, your hand, and your torso.
So you're actually using your fingertips and you're actually tapping parts
so like
of
on the
your
side of your
body.
hand, like if anyone's ever had acupuncture, there's a common point at the side of your hand, and sometimes you can really feel that needle buzz because it's a stress point. It's a small intestine meridian. So we have these meridians in the traditional Chinese medicine, and we have these points, and you can use your two fingers and tap on these points. And so there's a whole protocol, tapping on the side of your hand, between the eyebrows, the side of the eyes, under the eyes, above the lips, below the lips, at your collarbones, at your lower rib point. And while you're doing this tapping, which is being shown to actually send an electromagnetic signal, which is apparently mediated through collagen in your body to your brain, and it's calming your nervous system. It's calming that sort of limbic system, amygdala area, while you're actually exposing yourself to a distressing moment. Like, I'm really worried about this presentation. I'm so stupid. I'm really going to screw this up, right? So being able to hold that stressful situation in your mind while you're tapping down these acupressure points to calm your nervous system, and pairing it with a acceptance or self-compassion statement. I love this as a tool because for perfectionists who have a hard time sitting and meditating, they're always in their head. Tapping, which is the common name for emotional freedom technique, gives them something to do. And there's apps out there that demonstrate this. You can find it online.
People who do this actually experience. I mean, you don't have to take your word for it. Just try it, is what you're
Oh
saying.
my God. I just say to people, go on this app or watch this online, try it every day, and then come back. And I mean, I'll demonstrate it. We'll focus on something going back to where do you notice the stress in your body on a scale of 1 to 10, which is a SUDS rating, a subjective units of distress rating. How intense is this for you? What are the thoughts and emotions associated with this? So you gather all this little bit of information, and then you help the client, you walk them through cultivating an acceptance statement that they can metabolize, because a lot of people don't like to do, I love and accept myself completely. But they might be able to say, I accept my feelings right now.
Oh my, we're just getting started, I feel like, Tara. And we've run out of time here, so I suggest that people pick up your book, The Perfectionist's Dilemma by Tara Cousineau. And I've been speaking with Tara Cousineau, and if you want to know more about her work and all that she's doing and offering, you can go to her website, TaraCousineau.com. She spells her name TaraCousineau, TaraCousineau.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3846.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore new dimensions.
CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.